and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. In the next half hour, we're going to talk about collaboration between zoos and conservation. And joining me today is Kevin Dries, Director of Animal Care and Conservation at Blank Park Zoo, and Jesse Lowry, Conservation Manager at Blank Park Zoo. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good, Ryan.
Very well.
Okay, Kevin, tell us a little bit about some of the major points of conservation between zoos.
Okay. Well, first, it's important to know some of our acronyms. And so when we say AZA, we're talking about the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. And there are currently 200 and about 32 members, I think. And these zoos have several ways that they work together to accomplish some of their goals. And I think the ones we're going to talk about today is the latest project called SAFE, Saving Animals from Extinction. And then we're also going to talk about our cooperative breeding programs called Species Survival Plans, or SSPs, as well as a conservation project that Jesse knows more about.
Yeah, and as well as maybe the Field Conservation Committee within AZA. And perhaps before we get started, let's talk a little bit about what accreditation means and what it means to be an accredited zoo like Blank Park Zoo.
Okay. For any organization that has a facility that has non-agricultural animals and they want to be open to the public in some way, they need a USDA exhibitor's permit. And my understanding is that there are about 2,500 places in the United States that have this exhibitor's permit. And that's a requirement to be open. And for those places that call themselves, that want to be zoos, that want to voluntarily be a part of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, they can go through an accreditation process where all their programs are looked at, how they care for their animals, how they meet the mission of a modern zoo, which would be looked at from a recreation, education, conservation and research standpoint. And there are currently about 232 members of those. So really only about 10% of the facilities that are open in a zoo-like situation are part of AZA. But accreditation happens once every 5 years where all those components are looked at and they have to meet a certain standard, and there'll be a visiting committee that leaves with suggestions for improvement as well as what an institution already does in a great way. And then there's actually a commission that either grants accreditation for the next 5 years, or they can also not grant accreditation too if there are some issues that need to be worked out at the institution.
And Blank Park Zoo has been accredited since when?
Since 1986. The zoo actually closed in 1984 and was totally remodeled. And when it reopened in 1986, it had the name changed to Blank Park Zoo to honor the family that gave the startup money and the current property that the zoo lives on. And it's been accredited continually since 1986.
So how do you see AZA helping all of these accredited zoos across the nation to collaborate to help save animals in the wild?
Well, the zoos have had different programs over the years, but the current one that seems to be getting a lot of attraction that we want to talk about today is called SAFE, for Saving Animals from Extinction. And it's really the culmination of the modern mission of a zoo. What is the purpose of a zoo? We're saying this SAFE represents the combined efforts that all of these accredited institutions can do. And when you consider that 180 million people visit these accredited zoos every year, we have a large audience. And so AZA SAFE tries to bring together that the visitor impact and the scientific nature of all the current work that's going on in the field in a project, and kind of bring that together so that people can be aware of what's the wildlife crisis that's currently going on. And kind of the process is that 100 species of animals that zoos thought they could assist, again, given the audience they got, the financial resources that they represent, and the bringing together of the in-the-wild knowledge that people working in the field have. They started with 100 species they thought they could help. They've narrowed it down to 10, and they're going to try to pick off one at a time and do something major for that species in the wild that saves it from leaving the planet.
Could you give us an example of, maybe a project that AZA has been working on with one of those animals?
Yeah, well, I think the first misconception that we would need to clear up is that because part of, in the years past, a zoo's mission was kind of a Noah's Ark, where they're going to take in animals, save them from their loss of habitat, breed them in captivity, and put them back. And the reality is that that scenario is not going to work for every species. And so the way zoos are going to be involved is not just that. In fact, probably not that way very often. Although we've been successful with some species that way, the California condor, black-footed ferret, there's a list of over 20 species that are now have a bright future because of the involvement of AZA accredited zoos. But basically, I think that's captive breeding is not going to be the best way that zoos are involved. And as an example, one of those 10 species chosen was the African penguin. And they use knowledge gained from having these birds in zoos to help animals in the wild. And as a real quick example, African penguins nest on the shoreline. Guano is years of buildup of fecal material, and they actually nest in cavities. They excavate a burrow, and they lay their eggs in there, and that burrow makes a little microenvironment that is just right for the eggs to hatch and the chicks to be reared. But guano was also a good fertilizer, and so companies would mine this guano, and the penguins were losing their nesting locations. And not unlike the development of wood duck nest boxes, bluebird nest boxes, using the zoo now. In the zoo, penguins nest in boxes, they're really kind of dog air kennels. And so zoos were able to contribute the design of a nest box that was suitable for that the birds would actually use. And so in that way, we're using things learned by the captive population to help those in the wild.
Another thing that I really love about SAFE is how we are all trying to really build off the existing knowledge. There's been researchers all over the world working on the conservation of these specific species, and we are just trying to come in as zoos and aquariums, as these accredited organizations with all of these wildlife experts, veterinarians, husbandry experts, and coming in to bolster and support the existing programs on the ground. And that's a really simple and effective and efficient way to do conservation. I've got the list of SAFE species here. Looks like the first 10 species that SAFE is focusing on is the African penguin, Asian elephant, black rhinoceros, cheetah, gorilla, sea turtle, sharks, vaquita, western pond turtle, and the whooping crane. So it looks like, Kevin, we've got some charismatic species on here and some maybe not so charismatic species.
That's true. And I think that's an important distinction to make, that the western pond turtle, the reason that was chosen is because it was very endangered in the wild. Some species, some individuals existed in zoos in its normal range in the western part of the United States. And so they were able to use that zoo captive population as well as take some eggs from the wild, head start them in a zoo, meaning they hatched them, let the little turtles get up to a certain size, and then release them back in the wild. And in this case, it was actually the introduced, meaning non-native species of frog called bullfrog that was actually eating the turtles when they were small. And so by head starting in a zoo, the little turtles had a much greater chance of success when they were put back in the wild. So it's again, using the unique talents that zoos bring and combining it with the field biologists to hopefully help save species.
What people might be wondering what a vaquita is.
A vaquita. Yeah, it's something that not many people have heard about. It's a very small species of porpoise that is in off the coast of Mexico. And the numbers are very reduced, mostly as bycatch from fishing, meaning they get tangled up in the nets and can't survive. And there were less than 100 individuals left. And so we don't know if the strategy is going to work, but the Mexican government has decided to bring as many of those last ones into captivity and see if the experience that zoos have with breeding of other cetaceans, other porpoises and dolphins, if they might be able to do that. Basically, it's a last ditch. And now I'm thinking about it, I think the number was actually down to maybe 30 individuals. So a very critically endangered species.
I think you're right. 30 individuals last time we heard, and I believe the fishing season, you know, it comes up at a certain time every year, and so that the authorities really knew that there would be more bycatch the next time that that illegal fishing operation would start again. And I think when we talk about captivity with the vaquita, we're talking about sea pens, and so bringing them to kind of a semi-captive situation. And of course, the experts hope to build off of, like you said, all of our experience with other dolphins and porpoises. But this is an animal that's never been in human care before. So it'll be hard to find out what the proper diet is and how to, you know, keep them healthy and, you know, potentially breeding. So it'll be a steep road ahead. But I think that's the beauty of SAFE and this collaboration between all AZA-accredited zoos and other countries and other conservation organizations is that we have all the right people at the table. And so we can give animals like the vaquita one last shot at existence in this rapidly changing environment. So hopefully that will become a success story. And, you know, SAFE is, like you said, Kevin, utilizing the power of the AZA members and visitors of all of these accredited zoos across the nation, really to create a movement of conservation and increase public participation to let everybody know that there's something that every single person can do to help save animals in the wild. And that really mirrors what Blank Park Zoo has been working on the past, 10 years or so to make sure that we are providing a beautiful educational and recreational space for families and communities and schools to come visit and see these beautiful animals that are in human care. But the mission of Blank Park Zoo is really to inspire an appreciation of our natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. And what we see the zoo as is a window to the wild, a place where people can come in and get a glimpse of the beauty that nature has to offer. Look into the eyes of an endangered, critically endangered snow leopard. See the amazing agility of sea lions and seals. But the hard part is how we turn that sense of awe that people get when they see these beautiful, charismatic species into a real behavior change, something that's actually going to help save these animals from population decline, save these imperiled habitats all over the world. And that's how we want to use the zoo as a tool with our almost 500,000 visitors a year in central Iowa and the state and the Midwest region as a whole. And so, you know, just quickly, I'll run through a few of things that Blank Park Zoo is doing that kind of mirrors what the broader SAFE community is doing nationwide. We are trying to help save animals in the wild in many ways, including local conservation efforts, like our pollinator conservation project, Plant Grow Fly. We give folks all the information that they need to build butterfly gardens or pollinator habitats at any scale to help our bees and butterflies. We've got an upcycle program that removes invasive plant species from local parks, including honeysuckle and mulberry that just so happen to be a favorite treat item of some of our animals, like the giraffe and rhino. So that's kind of a win-win situation. We collaborated with Iowa DNR and others to translocate a few hundred greater prairie chickens from Nebraska to suitable habitat in Iowa. We breed and release animals right here at the zoo. 36 trumpeter swans have been released over the past couple decades and released back into the wild in Iowa. We also send our staff into the field to help field organizations, those people and organizations that are out in the range countries of some of these imperiled populations and habitats. Because we're a staff, we might be a smaller zoo, but we've got a permanent staff of over 50 folks with expertise in everything from veterinary care to animal husbandry to graphic design to grant writing. And these types of skills can be extremely valuable to these small nonprofits that are out in the range countries. Of course, we incorporate conservation messaging into all of our education programs, and we fund In the Wild programs, which is the real meat and potatoes of what a zoo can do to help save endangered species. And that's really the backbone of SAFE as well. And so, you know, all of this comes together with collaborating with all the other accredited zoos in the nation. All of the individual zoos are doing their individual work. And then by pooling all of our resources and expertise together, we can have a much greater impact. And the AZA itself actually has a new director Dan Ash, who was the former director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And so we're really excited to see all of his experience come to the table as well. Kevin, can you talk a little bit about the Field Conservation Committee within the AZA?
Okay, well, as I said before, the AZA is a voluntary organization for the members to belong, and there are several types of committees there that are made up by volunteers that are chosen to represent the organization on that. And one of them that relates to this in the wild is called the Field Conservation Committee. And basically, their role is to help the 232 zoos that for those smaller institutions trying to figure out exactly how they can fit in and make a difference with animals in the wild. It's really there to mentor and act as, in any way, any assistance that they can offer to help get them to start seeing their mission as helping wildlife outside of their zoo borders. And oftentimes it's very simple, like how you start generating a revenue stream that can be used to support those projects. Sometimes it relates more to, yes, what you are doing fits into the category of field conservation. But also another important function that they do is they accept and review grants, because there is a grant funding arm to the AZA that gets funded through member donations. And that money is distributed based upon grants that is oversaw by the Field Conservation Committee. And the other thing we could say about that is that oftentimes, really just understanding that that's the mission and trying to meet the goal and the standards of the AZA. Like I was saying, it's a voluntary organization with pretty high standards and guidelines. And one of those is that a substantial percentage of your operating budget needs to go towards in situ or in the wild conservation. And for some institutions, that is, a change in direction of where they have been. When having a facility like a zoo with lots of animal care and facilities expenses, having money go to outside the walls is not always that easy to do. And the Field Conservation Committee has put together guidelines to help institutions do that.
That's really exciting. And right here at Blank Park Zoo, we give a certain percentage of all of the revenue that we make here at the zoo to In the Wild programs. And so over the years, we have supported many, many field programs in about every continent around the world. And our new funding method is that a portion of all revenue made at Blank Park Zoo goes to In the Wild Conservation. And so it's very neat to be able to tell visitors when they stop by that just their ticket price alone, if they ride the train, if they ride the carousel, if they feed the giraffe, if they get married at the zoo, if they come to our Zoo Brew event, a portion of all that revenue goes to save animals in the wild. It also means that every single staff member here at Blank Park Zoo is helping to save animals in the wild, because every single position is important to help make that revenue that makes this all successful. And so that's really exciting as well. Let's talk a little bit about species survival plans and how that's another way that accredited zoos can collaborate together to help save wildlife.
That's true. Part of the growing zoo ethics is that we don't want to be a consumer of wildlife. We don't want to take animals from the wild for our exhibit purposes. And so starting back in the 1980s, these cooperative breeding programs came into existence. In fact, the very first one was for the tiger. And basically what it means is that we said there's about 230 member zoos. And if you think about it this way, that of those 232, maybe 50 all have of one species, let's say it was a tiger. And basically breeding and transfer decisions are made upon what is best for the captive population. Those kind of animals aren't bought and sold. There's not the incentive to breed tigers for revenue. And you make those decisions, not just what's best for your own, let's say, Blank Park Zoo's institution, but what's best for the whole captive population. And when I say best for the captive population, there's kind of four things that, as a program leader to an SSP, that you manage for. And one of those is to avoid inbreeding, whichever everybody kind of understands, is that you don't want to breed closely related individuals. And the idea is that you want to keep all the genetic variability that the species has, because you don't want to have to take more individuals out of the wild. So you're going to make choices of which ones reproduce to avoid inbreeding. You're also going to manage for equal founder representation. And a founder is an animal that has come from the wild. It is, and that may have been 50 years ago, and there may have been generations of animals, but we have a stud book that keeps all that information about who the sire and dam or the mother and father were, as you go all the way back to a wild-caught individual. And so equal founder representation means that of those founders taken from the wild, that they would... Your goal is to have equal numbers of living descendants. And so if there were 10 founders and you had a population of 100, you would hope that they'd all have 10 relatives. If you had one that had 80 relatives and the other ones only had a few, that would be unequal, and you wouldn't have captured all the variability in the genetics of the group. The other thing that you manage for is just demography, meaning age. You don't want all your animals in your captive population to be the same age. You want to stagger that so that they don't all leave reproductive age at the same time. And the other one is simply what we usually call carrying capacity. If 50 zoos can hold an animal, you count up how many can have two here, five here, six here, and you get to a number. And that's, you don't want your captive population to get bigger than that, because then that means that, A, they have to find a place outside of AZA institutions, which sometimes we do, and they're called sustainability partner institutions. And if they go through a little process to figure that they have appropriate holding space and they're financially sound to commit to participating in SSP, they can. And then that carrying capacity, if the other thing would be, we don't want to crowd them, because that would be not good animal welfare. And animal welfare is given one of the highest regards at AZA institutions. And so those are the kinds of things you manage for in an SSP.
And so give us some examples of SSP animals that we have here at the zoo. And I know that we have a couple leaders here for the SSP program as well.
Right. When we were saying leaders, there's like someone volunteers to manage the stud book and make those decisions, like every year what animals go where. And it's not only for endangered species, though most endangered species are. So here at the zoo, black rhino, Japanese macaque, white-handed gibbon, tiger, snow leopard, lion, they all have SSPs, but also the Bennett's wallabies do, and the Cory bustards, and other birds that they may not be endangered species, but yet a good zoo manager wants to manage the captive population in captivity to the best of their ability, regardless if they're endangered or not. So there are currently about over 700 stud books and SSPs, but there are thousands of species in captivity. So not all are managed with SSPs, but it's a continually growing program. It's only been going since, like we said, about the 1980s. Program leaders are people who work at AZA accredited institutions that want to take on that extra responsibility. And so some of the species that we have program leaders for here at the zoo are the Bennett's wallabies, the gray-capped dove, let's see, the red-fronted macaw, and the harbor seal are all species that our staff take a role in.
And I think it's worth noting, you know, an overarching theme concerning SSP animals and this cooperative breeding and managed care throughout AZA-accredited zoos is that we're hoping and trying and working to hedge against extinction. And so it's a couple different things. Some of these animals are bred to be released back into the wild. And like you said, there's over 20 examples of animals being saved from extinction by these captive breeding programs. But also just to make sure that captive populations are genetically robust and to perhaps repopulate the wild in the future when some conditions in the wild will have changed, hopefully. And the example that comes to mind is the black rhinoceros, the eastern black rhinos that we have here at the zoo. And we had a pretty famous baby in the past several months. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. There's the good things to talk about and the not so good things, but I think the challenge for not just zoos, but all people. So Tumani, yes, she was the first baby black rhinoceros, probably born in the state of Iowa. Her mother's name was Ayana, and she came to the Blank Park Zoo from Zoo Miami, and her father, her sire, came to us from the Great Plains Zoo. And really, this process started about 2 or 3 years before they actually came to the zoo, when the Blank Park Zoo was looking to expand its boundaries a bit, and we added 6 acres to create our Jamaqua Africa area. And we got in touch with the program leader that, hey, we're going to build a facility for black rhinos. And so the program leader can make decisions so that there would be some animals that came here. And our first two original ones came here when they're about 2 years old, which is about the time that they naturally separate from their mother. And they came into a brand new facility, and they really don't reach sexual maturity till they're about 4 or 5 years old. And as soon as they did, why, Tumani was the outcome. And of course, she is doing great. And her future will be that when she's probably about 2 years old, she too will find, would be recommended for her to transfer to another institution. And the zookeepers will prepare her for that by giving her some time separate from her mother, and also introducing her to the shipping crate and let her getting comfortable with that, all with the goal of her welfare in mind, having her be as comfortable with the transfer as possible. And some people may wonder, how do rhinos move? There are several different ways, but how ours came here and probably how Tumani will someday go to her new zoo is basically they're in a rhino sturdy crate that is put into a nondescript solid-sided trailer. And basically, you could potentially see it going down the road and probably wouldn't recognize it as a rhino hauler. There are companies that are in the business of moving exotic animals like that that take special handling and special types of trailers. But I think the bigger picture, Tumani's birth is great. We had a lot of fun with it. So we're excited to have her here, and she's been very popular this summer.
I think that Tumani is a wonderful, cute, rambunctious, popular example of the success that we can have by collaborating with other AZA-accredited zoos for conservation, and specifically the Eastern Black Rhinos. Thank you so much for being here today, Kevin.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thanks a lot, everybody. And if you want to check out Blank Park Zoo, we're open 7 days a week during the summer, and you can learn all about the zoo, such as the animals and special events like Zoo Brew and other events that go on during the year, previous episodes of this show, and more at blankparkzoo.com. Make sure you check out the zoo's YouTube channel, and you can see cute little videos of baby rhino Tumani. And make sure you join us next time for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.